princely Nazis and Balfour Zionists. In August 1945, an inquiry by British Army intelligence officer Anthony Blunt proved to be a source of indignity to the royal family. Blunt had carried out a secret mission for George VI to find any documents in Germany that might prove embarrassing to the royal family about any links with the Nazis in pre-war years. He was also assigned to see if there was anything damaging concerning the young Prince Philip, who was paying court to Princess Elizabeth, the king's oldest daughter and heir to the throne. Blunt's researches proved that the prince did have German relatives who were avowed Nazis before and during the war, revelations that troubled many in Britain at the time and could have proved a severe impediment to a royal marriage. The question of the prince's Nazi relatives was raised in 2008 by Mohammed Al-Fayed during his evidence at the inquest into the deaths of his son Dodi and Princess Diana in 1997. Mr. Al-Fayed believes Prince Philip personally orchestrated their deaths and, while being questioned, demanded that the coroner Mr. Justice Scott Baker investigate the prince's Nazi past. The sinister Nazi connections come from three of the prince's four sisters, Sophie, Cecile, and Margarita. All had married German princes, three of whom became leading Nazis. Paul Callan, Prince Philip and the Nazis, Express, February 20, 2008. Philip was born in Corfu in 1921. His parents, Prince Andrew of Greece and Princess Alice, fled the country after being sentenced to death by a revolutionary court. Later, Prince Philip, who actually had the German-sounding family name of Schleswig-Holstein-Sonderburg-Glücksburg, changed his name to Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten. It is well documented that Prince Philip's sister, Sophia, was married to Christopher of Hesse-Cassel, an SS colonel who named his eldest son Karl Adolf in Hitler's honor. Indeed, all four of Philip's sisters married high-ranking Nazis. The prospect of the former Nazis and Nazi sympathizers attending his 1947 wedding to the future Queen of England meant he was allowed to invite only two guests. 2 years ago, 2006, more revelations of Philip's Nazi links emerged in a book that featured never-before-published photographs of Philip aged 16 at the 1937 funeral of his elder sister Cecile, flanked by relatives in SS and brown shirt uniforms. Another picture shows his youngest sister, Sophia, sitting opposite Hitler at the wedding of Hermann and Emmy Goering. Philip was forced to concede that his family found Hitler's attempts to restore Germany's power and prestige attractive and admitted they had inhibitions about the Jews. Steve Watson and Alex Jones, Modern British Royalty, Eugenicists, Nazis, and Neo-Feudalists, Infowars.com, April 26, 2011. The damaging material that Anthony Blunt discovered on his secret mission to Germany after the war contained much information about the actions of Philip's Nazi family. Most of Philip's relations were excluded from receiving invitations to his royal wedding in 1947, because their husbands were German officers with Nazi connections. Before the war began, the Queen Mother was a supporter of making concessions to Hitler and the Nazis, a feeling shared by a large number of British aristocrats who admired the way Hitler was dealing with the communists. For some 50 years, royal documents were held in vaults at Windsor Castle that detailed the abdicated King Edward VIII's relations with Hitler and the Nazis. They included captured German documents describing the Windsors' meeting with Hitler in 1937 and plans to restore Edward, the Duke of Windsor, to the throne if the Nazis won the war. Some of these documents still remain hidden from the public. According to The Independent Online, British government files released in 2017 revealed that Winston Churchill fought to conceal Nazi plans for the invasion of Britain. While many have described Edward VIII and his wife as known sympathizers of the Nazis and their policies, relatives of Wallis Simpson, the American woman whom Edward had an affair with, and the reason for his abdication, have suggested that in fact Edward was excommunicated by the rest of the royal family because he wasn't friendly enough with the Nazis. Steve Watson and Alex Jones, Modern British Royalty, Eugenicists, Nazis, and Neo-Feudalists, Infowars.com, April 26, 2011. The onset of Nazism and the large-scale maltreatment of European Jews led many Jews to support Zionism, a political alliance started by the Austrian journalist Theodor Herzl. In 1897, Herzl convened the first Zionist Congress at Basel, Switzerland, stating, "Zionism strives to create for the Jewish people a home in Palestine secured by public law." When the Ottoman government refused Herzl's request for Palestinian autonomy, he found support in Great Britain. In 1903, the British government offered 6,000 square miles, 15,500 square km, of uninhabited Uganda for settlement, but the Zionists held out for Palestine. Sir Gerard Lowther, the British ambassador to Turkey during the early 1900s, reported the following: "As Turkey happens to contain the places sacred to Israel, it is but natural that the Jew should strive to maintain a position of exclusive influence and utilize it for the furtherance of his ideals, viz., the ultimate creation of an autonomous Jewish state in Palestine or Babylonia. The Jew would kill two birds with one stone if he could obtain from the Turk unrestricted immigration of Jews into Turkey, an aim that he has been pursuing for years back, and transfer to Mesopotamia some millions of his co-religionists in bondage in Russia and Romania. In return for unrestricted immigration of foreign Jews, he has offered the young Turk to sacrifice his mother tongue and replace it by Turkish, and even to take over the whole of the Turkish national debt. But Ottoman Jewish entrepreneurs who became Turkish citizens did not hold the same views as most Zionist Jews concerning the re-establishment of an Israeli state around Jerusalem. In an article published in the Fortnightly Review during the Young Turks Revolution, I. Zangwill alluded to this plain fact by observing that the four Jewish deputies in the Ottoman parliament are violently anti-Zionist. In a classic illustration of divide and conquer, the British royal family made concessions to Hitler and the Nazis with one gracious hand, while promising the territory of Palestine as a homeland to Jews with the other hand. It was a shrewd means of keeping the royal establishment in a position of control by making the people under it disagree with each other. According to Agon Caesar Corti's book The Rise of the House of Rothschild, 1928, the Rothschild family had until modern times opposed Zionism on the grounds that it would be risky for their standing as citizens of the various nations they reside in. Edmund Rothschild opposed political Zionism, although the Jewish colonies in Palestine before the war in fact owed their survival to his contributions. Nathaniel in England was also an opponent of Zionism, until he met the Zionist chief, Theodore Herzl, in 1902. With little support in the Rothschild family, Nathaniel advocated the commission for making a national home for the Jews in East Africa, Uganda. After a while, the resistance of other Rothschilds to Zionist ideas was worn down, and British Foreign Secretary Arthur James Balfour made his famous Balfour Declaration of November 2, 1917 as an address to Baron Lionel Walter Rothschild. Two Russian Jews living in England, Chaim Weizmann and Nahum Sokolow, were instrumental in obtaining the Balfour Declaration, which promised British support, to the Rothschilds, for the creation of a Jewish national home in Palestine. Lionel Walter and James Rothschild, son of Edmund, attended the first Zionist Political Committee's conference on February 7, 1917. The Balfour Declaration was included in Britain's League of Nations mandate over Palestine, 1922. On November 29, 1947, the United Nations proposed the partition of Palestine into separate Arab and Jewish states and the internationalization of Jerusalem. The creation of the State of Israel on May 14, 1948, brought about the Arab-Israeli War of 1948-49, in the course of which Israel obtained more land than had been provided by the UN resolution, and drove out 800,000 Arabs who became displaced persons known as Palestinians. Before long, the curious idea of British Israelism was pushed by various ideological causes, such as the desire for ordinary people to have a glorious ancestral past, and pride in the British Empire. British Israelism, also called Anglo-Israelism, is a doctrine based on the hypothesis that people of Western Europe are the direct descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. The doctrine often includes the belief that the British royal family is directly descended from the line of King David, or a so-called Merovingian bloodline. But human genetics does not support British Israelism's notion of a DNA link between Middle East Jews and Western Europeans. Genetic research on the Y chromosomes of Jews has found that Jews are closely related to other populations originating in the Middle East, such as Kurds, Turks, Armenians, and Arabs. Wikipedia.org. Anglo-Israel was to be a chartered company controlled by Great Britain. The Balfour Declaration is not kept in Israel but in the British Museum. In 2016, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas threatened to sue the UK and later told the international community that Britain should make an apology for the 1917 Balfour Homeland Declaration. From the Napoleonic era on, the broad arena of the Middle East was the battleground of Britain's struggle to protect the road to India from its traditional rivals, France and Russia. During the First World War, this grand 19th century contest, known as the Great Game, reached its climax, partly in fear of expansion by its wartime ally, Russia. Britain forged alliances with the Arabs, encouraging them to revolt against their Turkish rulers. A Peace to End All Peace by David Frumkin, 1989 is one of the first books to take an effective panoramic view of what was happening, not only in Egypt, Palestine, Turkey, and the Arab regions of Asia, but also in Afghanistan and Central Asia. Even when the British were fighting alongside the French and Russians against the Germans and Turks, the Great Game was never far from their minds. From the time of the outbreak of hostilities in 1914, Lord Kitchener, Britain's Secretary of State for War, aimed to obstruct the possible expansion of Russia into the Middle East. The Prime Minister, David Lloyd George, once likened Kitchener to a great revolving lighthouse. Sometimes, he said, Kitchener's intellect would project light, then there would be sudden darkness. He might have added that, on the subject of Russian aggrandizement, the beam never shut off. Seen in this perspective, all parts of the Middle Eastern puzzle begin to fall into place, including the Balfour Declaration. In 1917, the British promised the Jews a national home in Palestine, while simultaneously assuring the Palestinian Arabs that the pledge would not be carried out at their expense. The Great Game was once again a key reason. According to Philip Kerr, secretary and advisor to the Prime Minister, a Jewish Palestine was considered a bridge between Africa, Asia, and Europe on the road to India. Other historians have pointed out that the Balfour Declaration was also designed to protect the Suez Canal. Mr. Frumkin seems not to have read Michael Cohen's Churchill and the Jews, for example, where Curzon is quoted as asking in 1918, has not the whole history of the war shown us that Palestine is really the strategic buffer of Egypt? Lloyd George himself held a somewhat different view, believing that a Jewish state would be agreeable to God's will as well as to British interests. His attitude should not be taken as hypocritical. Lloyd George's Zionism is the title of one of the best chapters in the book. Unlike most of his colleagues in the British cabinet, who had been trained in Greek and Latin classics, the Prime Minister had been brought up on the Bible. He once said, in the words of I Samuel 15, that it would not be worth conquering the Holy Land only to hew it in pieces before the Lord. Lloyd George also believed that Palestine must be one and indivisible to renew its greatness as a living entity. All that did not prevent him from shrewdly foreseeing Britain's future in Palestine. We shall be there by conquest and shall remain, he predicted. Among the more obscure pieces of the puzzle is Sir Mark Sykes, the mastermind behind the redrawing of the boundaries of the Middle East and therefore, in a sense, the man most responsible for creating the modern Middle East. Mr. Frumkin has brought this relatively unknown statesman to light, making excellent use of the work of such scholars as Roger Adelson. Before the war, Sykes was one of the few members of Parliament who had traveled widely in the Middle East. He served as the Middle East expert to Kitchener and later to the War Cabinet Secretariat. His goal, opposed by some anti-French members of the government, was the construction of a French buffer zone in Lebanon and Syria as a sort of Chinese Great Wall that would prevent Russian penetration into the Middle East, just as the British, seeking to consolidate their Middle East holdings after World War II, welcomed American influence in Greece and Turkey as a check against Soviet expansion. W.M. Roger Lewis, The Great Middle East Game, and Still No Winner, The New York Times, August 27, 1989. There was a great deal of contention that Lloyd George's Zionism was a messianic scenario. A land-centered nationalism was presented as the highest form of religious virtue, and the histories of Zionism and the State of Israel were viewed as irreversible steps in the unfolding messianic fulfillment. Settlements, though originally founded illegally, were subsequently granted official recognition by the Israeli government, especially under right-wing regimes. The main ideologue of contemporary religious Zionism was Rabbi Abraham Isaac Kook, 1865-1935, who said the resettlement of the Jewish people in its homeland would bring salvation, Geula, to Jews, and then to the entire world. An extreme position was taken by the American-Israeli rabbi and ultranationalist writer Meir Kahane, 1932-1990, whose banned racist party Katch ridiculed democracy as an un-Jewish import, and advocated laws that would prohibit sexual and social contact with Arabs. Lloyd George's Zionism moralized the ingathering of exiles by God and his favored Messiah. In this partisan adaptation, the Redeemer who emerged to collect the Jews back into the land of Israel was, on the face of it, Lord Rothschild, as foretold by the dogma of the Illuminati. However, secular, socialist and even atheist schools of thought in actual fact controlled political Zionism. 50 years after the first Zionist Congress and 30 years after the Balfour Declaration, Zionism achieved its goal of establishing a Jewish state in Palestine, but it simultaneously became a war zone surrounded by unfriendly Arab nations and Palestinian liberation organizations engaged in violence against Israel. President Trump recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Exodus is a 1960 epic film starring Paul Newman. Produced and directed by Otto Preminger, the film was based on the 1958 novel by Leon Uris. Many commentators have identified the film as having been enormously influential in stimulating Zionism and support for Israel in the United States. The film is based on events that happened on the ship Exodus in 1947 as well as events dealing with the founding of the State of Israel in 1948. Holy Moses met the Pharaoh. Yeah, he tried to set him straight. Looked him in the eye. Let my people go. Holy Moses on the mountain. High above the golden calf. Went to get the Ten Commandments. Yeah, he's just gonna break em in half. All you zombies hide your faces. All you people in the street. All you sitting in high places. The pieces gonna fall on you. Hooters, All You Zombies, 1982. Due to the secrecy surrounding royal families, the link between Hitler's Third Reich and European royalty has gone largely unexplored. Prince Philip's comments on his family's Nazi connections appeared in the book Royals and the Reich, by Jonathan Petropoulos, published in Britain in 2006. Prince Philip said that there was a lot of enthusiasm for the Nazis at the time, the economy was good, we were anti-communist and who knew what was going to happen to the regime. There was one royal dignitary whose disreputable life and career perhaps did more than anything else to cement the resistance to Philip's entry into the royal family. This was his cousin, the British-born Prince Charles Edward, Queen Victoria's pet grandson. Prince Charles Edward was ostracized by his royal relations. At the time of Philip's marriage, Charles Edward, Charlie, was living in obscurity as a traitor to Britain. A Channel 4 documentary, Hitler's Favorite Royal, December 6, 2007, traced the dreadful tale of how this man, born into the British royal family, found himself fighting for the Kaiser in World War I, was purged of all his royal British titles and branded a traitor peer and then, even more disastrously, assisted Hitler's rise to power and ended his existence as a convicted Nazi. Charles Edward was president of the German Red Cross euthanasia program that killed 100,000 disabled people. His Royal Highness Prince Leopold Charles Edward, 2nd Duke of Albany, Earl of Clarence and Baron Arklow, was born at Claremont House, Surrey, on July 19, 1884. He was Queen Victoria's favorite grandson. King George V was his first cousin as were Kaiser Wilhelm II of Germany, and Russia's last Tsar, Nicholas II. But while he was still only a boy, his grandmother, Queen Victoria, announced that Charlie should become Duke of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, the German principality from which the Queen's husband Albert had come. Thus, Charles Edward left his home at 16, and became Karl Edward, Duke of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, with 13 castles in Germany and Austria, hunting lodges, hotels, a power station, tens of thousands of hectares of rich arable farmland in Bavaria and a duchy with an income worth £17 million in today's value. The Kaiser, who then married off Charlie to his own niece, Victoria, by whom he had 3 sons and a daughter, enrolled him at Germany's top military academy. And when, in 1914, war was declared following the assassination of the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, Charlie fought for the Kaiser against the country of his birth. In Britain, as the great monarchies of Europe, the Habsburgs of Austria, the Romanovs of Russia, and finally the Hohenzollerns of Germany tumbled from power, Charlie's first cousin, King George V, hastened to dump the German name of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha and adopted Windsor as the new title of Britain's royal dynasty. Worse was to follow after the war ended in 1918. George V removed all Charlie's British titles as well as the status of Royal Highness, and struck his name from the register of the Knights of the Garter. He was declared a traitor peer. Germany was now a republic, and Charlie, believing that communism was to blame, disastrously allied himself with the extreme right-wing political party led by a charismatic and rebellious former army corporal Adolf Hitler. By 1933, when Hitler seized power as Chancellor of Germany, the Duke of Saxe-Coburg was among his most fervent supporters. Charlie returned to Britain in 1936 to attend George V's funeral, but because he no longer had the right to wear a British uniform, he shockingly wore German military attire, complete with a stormtrooper's metal helmet. As president of the newly formed Anglo-German Fellowship, Charlie tried to stimulate personal dealings between his cousin, the new pro-German King Edward VIII, and Hitler. When Edward's abdication only 11 months later messed up that plan, Charlie again found himself out in the cold, bypassed by the new king, George VI. Hitler made him president of the German Red Cross, in which he presided over the horrific program of enforced euthanasia, in which some 100,000 mostly disabled people, including children, judged by the Nazis unworthy of life, were murdered. The extent of his involvement in this barbarism was never really established. When war unavoidably came in 1939, Charlie once again found himself on the wrong side. His 3 sons were sent to fight for the Germans, and one of them, Prince Hubertus, was killed on the Eastern Front. When he was eventually put on trial as a Nazi, Charles Edward pleaded not guilty. He claimed he had acted honorably and did not know of any crimes by the regime. He was not believed. Even though he was pardoned of participation in unrelenting war crimes, Charlie was judged to have been an important Nazi. His houses and estates were confiscated, and he was almost bankrupted by weighty fines. Only his failing health saved him from remaining in prison. By this time, Charles Edward had cancer. He was blind in one eye and crippled by arthritis. He was exiled forever from Britain and would never be permitted to return to the land it was deemed he had betrayed. He died on March 6, 1954, at the age of 69. Prince Charles Edward, sometime Duke of Albany, and later, at his grandmother Queen Victoria's insistence, Duke of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, is never mentioned today in the British royal family. He has been airbrushed from the history of the House of Windsor. The Nazi relative that the royals disowned, Daily Mail, December 1, 2007. In a typical subterfuge of divide and conquer, the royal establishment groomed one of Hitler's closest henchmen with one cordial nod, while pledging the land of Palestine as a dwelling to Jews with another thumbs up. The British royal family tottered on the time-tested design of double-dealing from the practice of dealing oneself multiple cards in order to gain an advantage. The English aristocracy symbolized a white Aryan master race Hitler so admired. Quite a few held a two-faced view that the British population would eventually support Hitler. A few Wall Street pals shared the illicit secret of Jefferson Medical College. The artificial insemination of a Quaker wife may well turn out a prized world teacher, as the marvel of the 20th century, worthy of patronage in spite of the eugenics involved. As said by some rumors, the firstborn son of donor insemination was a lost prince of Bavaria and Saxony. According to New Zealand author Greg Hallett, The History of the Illegitimate British Monarchy, The Hallett Report, 2011, some members of the royal family and the House of Rothschild donated sperm to launch eugenic studies before the gawky surfacing of the modern sperm bank. Other European royals likewise dropped into the Nazi rackets. Prince Philip of Hesse-Cassel, for instance, had joined the National Socialist Party in 1930, becoming the Nazi governor of Hesse in 1933, and later acted as the liaison between Hitler and Mussolini. Prince Bernhard, the father of Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, was a member of the Nazi Party, a 2010 book has claimed, contradicting the German-born Dutch war hero's lifelong denials. Bernhard, a secret history has revealed that the prince was a member of the German Nazi Party until 1934, 3 years before he married Princess Juliana, the future Queen of the Netherlands. Anneke van der Zijl, a Dutch historian, has found membership documents in Berlin's Humboldt University that prove Prince Bernhard, who studied there, had joined Deutsche Studentenschaft, a National Socialist student fraternity, as well as the Nazi Endstab and its paramilitary wing, the Sturmabteilung. He left all the groups on leaving university in December 1934, when he went to work for the German chemical giant, IG Farben. Bruno Waterfield, Dutch Prince Bernhard was member of Nazi Party, The Telegraph, March 5, 2010. In 1954, Prince Bernhard was a co-founder of the International Bilderberg Group, which has since met annually to discuss corporate globalization, a so-called New World Order. The Bilderberg Group is a society of NATO. After a 33-year reign, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands handed the throne over to her son Prince Willem-Alexander, in 2013. In 2005, just 2 weeks before Holocaust Memorial Day, Prince Harry figured it was a good idea to turn up at a colonials and natives costume party dressed as a Nazi. British tabloid The Sun published a photo of the prince wearing a swastika armband and a desert uniform similar to those worn by Erwin Rommel's German Afrika Korps. "I'm very sorry if I have caused any offense," the prince said in a statement. "It was a poor choice of costume, and I apologize." William Lee Adams, Prince Harry Goes Nazi, Time, June 10, 2011. A mixture of outrage and speculation continued to brew around the world after photos were published of Queen Elizabeth's grandson Prince Harry, the second son of Prince Charles and Princess Diana, wearing a Nazi uniform. Jewish groups in Britain reacted angrily to the prince's swastika provocation. A spokesman for the Board of Deputies of British Jews said, "It's not a joke to dress up as a Nazi, especially as we come up to the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. It is important that everybody remembers the evil that the Nazis were responsible for." The Labour peer Lord Yonah, who chairs the Holocaust Education Trust, told the Daily Mail, "I hope that on reflection Prince Harry will regret what was an insensitive and tasteless act." Sam Jones, royal family caught up in Nazi row, prince apologizes for tasteless costume, The Guardian, January 13, 2005. In 2009, the British tabloid News of the World leaked a video in which Prince Harry refers to his South Asian army comrades using racist language. He describes one officer as "our little Paki friend," employing a derogatory term for a Pakistani. Later, he spots a colleague wearing camouflage netting over his head and says, "You look like a raghead." His May 19, 2018 wedding to U.S. actress Meghan Markle was watered down by talk that gunman Demetrius Pagortsis had just killed 10 people at Santa Fe High School in Texas. Princess Diana, Princess of Wales, was born in 1961 to the aristocratic Spencer family. She was one of the most adored members of the British royal family. On July 29, 1981, Diana married Prince Charles of Wales, heir to the British throne, and became part of the English royal family. Prince Charles and Princess Diana's marriage began to have noticeable problems, but their divorce wasn't finalized until August 28, 1996. Diana started dating Dodi Fayed, son of Mohammed Al Fayed, an Egyptian business magnate. Fayed owned the Hotel Ritz Paris and formerly Harrods department store. Diana angered government ministers by calling for an international ban on landmines. On August 31, 1997, Diana, who was accompanying Dodi Fayed in his car in Paris, suffered from a fatal crash in the Alma tunnel that led to her death. Diana, Dodi Fayed and Henry Paul, the driver, died. The lone survivor was bodyguard Trevor Rees-Jones. Fayed's father presumed MI6 and Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, to be involved in the accidental car crash, which he believed was well planned. The French police held an inquiry, but never published the full report. For over 10 years, the British authorities evaded the issue of holding an inquest. At one point, they even tried to hold it in secret, or with a jury comprised solely of members of the royal household. Script writer Paul Sparks spoke about his controversial 2011 movie, Unlawful Killing, that was banned in the UK. To take just a couple of examples, a sworn legal note in which Diana claimed that her husband was planning an accident in my car was concealed for 6 years by the Metropolitan Police, and blood tests that were used as the sole basis for the claim that driver Henry Paul was drunk were deemed to be biologically inexplicable by the police's own forensic expert, suggesting that the blood tested was probably not his blood at all. Unlawful Killing interview with the makers of the Princess Diana cover-up movie, movies.ie, July 3, 2011. In 2012, author Gennady Sokolov said that Russian intelligence agents in France had become suspicious of the sudden arrival of three senior MI6 officers in Paris just before Princess Diana's death. Sokolov pointed to foul play and a sophisticated cover-up. He claimed, "There will never be documents about it. Never." Sokolov, who has many contacts in the Russian secret services, said the MI6 officers had arrived and stayed incognito. "Normally when players of such rank are in the country, the host intelligence services are aware about it. Here DST, French counterintelligence, had no idea. Our people were following them. After all, they were leading faces of British intelligence. Whatever people say about our guys from Yazinvo, headquarters of Russian Foreign Intelligence, the SVR, they know their rivals very well. Will Stewart, what was MI6 team doing in Paris the night Princess Diana died?" Express, December 30, 2012. In 2013, the estranged wife of a SAS veteran claimed elite soldiers murdered Princess Diana. The former sniper, known only as Soldier, and believed the Princess of Wales' death in Paris was carried out by British special forces, who then covered it up. Soldier and claimed driver Henry Paul was blinded by an intense flash of light moments before he lost control of their Mercedes and killed the princess and her lover Dodi Fayed. Martin Robinson and Amanda Williams, estranged wife of SAS soldier behind Princess Diana murder claims, tells police she is utterly convinced by his story, Mail Online, September 5, 2013. In an August 2017 talk with the Daily Mirror, the 85-year-old father of Princess Diana's death crash driver Henry Paul claimed, British police told him she was murdered. In the interim, the royal family was granted new right of secrecy and absolute protection from public scrutiny. According to a Whitehall document, which was released following a court order, the Queen and Prince Charles were using their little-known power of veto over new laws to cover up more than was previously thought. Legal scholar John Kirkhope, who fought to access the papers following a Freedom of Information case, said the document revealed senior royals have real influence and real power. "There has been an implication that these prerogative powers are quaint and sweet, but actually there is real influence and real power, albeit unaccountable," he said. Alice Phillips' son, Queen and Prince Charles using power of veto over new laws, Whitehall documents reveal, The Telegraph, January 15, 2013. In December 2013, British police said they found no credible evidence to reopen investigations into the deaths of Diana, Princess of Wales, and her friend Dodi Fayed in the Paris road crash of 1997, Sky News reported. London's Metropolitan Police had said in August 2013 that they were assessing new information about the deaths of Diana, Fayed and their driver. Media reports at the time said the Met had been past allegations that a member of the British military had caused the deaths. There is no credible or relevant evidence to support a theory that such claims had any basis in fact, Assistant Commissioner Mark Rowley said in a letter that the British broadcaster said it had seen. Rowley added that the Met would not reopen any criminal homicide investigation or refer the matter back to the coroner. Police won't reopen investigation into Princess Diana's death, Reuters, December 16, 2013. A journalist on trial in Britain's phone hacking scandal testified on March 13, 2014, that Princess Diana provided him with information on the royals, including a phone directory, as part of her feud with her estranged husband, Prince Charles. Former News of the World royal editor Clive Goodman said Diana handed over the data after her separation from Charles, when she was going through a very, very difficult time and was looking for media support. Editor testifies Princess Diana was Palace Mole, Associated Press, March 13, 2014. And it seems to me you lived your life. Like a candle in the wind. Never fading with the sunset. When the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here. Along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before. Your legend ever will. Elton John and Bernie Taupin, Candle in the Wind, 1973-1997. Throughout most of the modern world, English is the common language of commerce. But amongst the British aristocracy, German is still spoken as a rank of nobility. The Queen of England may have the old manuscripts of German philosophers in the library at Windsor Castle, but she did not keep the works of William Shakespeare. The Queen does not have the complete works of Shakespeare at Windsor Castle, actor Sir Derek Jacobi has claimed, after staff searched high and low to find one to put on a play for Prince Charles. Sir Derek said he had been asked personally to extend a show at the castle, and requested a copy of Shakespeare's work to find more material. Despite scouring Windsor Castle, he claimed, our reigning monarch didn't have a copy. He disclosed the actors, which included Dame Judi Dench and Emma Thompson, ended up dredging up sonnets from memory and performing a song twice to fill time. Hannah Furness, Sir Derek Jacobi, no copy of Shakespeare at Windsor Castle. The Telegraph, September 9, 2013. The British monarchy, and the city of London's leading crown bankers, enthusiastically backed Hitler and the Nazis, bankrolled the Führer's election, and did everything possible to build the Nazi war machine, for Britain's planned geopolitical war between Germany and Russia. Ryan Paul, Royal Nazi History, ryanpaul.ca.